17 years old. 18 years is a $2 trillion asset. And
I could care less what Bitcoin trades for.
It's just a matter of the money, the money, the money. Warren Buffett is poverty stricken, in my view, because his entire mindset is based on fiat money.
Here's a different way to see the world.
Well, do you own all of the Bitcoin in the world? And you offered it to me for $25. I wouldn't take it because what would I do with it?
Welcome back to Over the Horizon, a Bitcoin podcast. Today, I'm here with Caleb Franzen, founder of Cubic Analytics, where he publishes weekly analysis on macro, the stock market, and Bitcoin, and someone who's been dead on accurate with all of his Bitcoin calls over the last several months. Caleb, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Dude, glad to be here. First of all, we all make mistakes sometimes. I definitely don't have a perfect record, but I've been trying my best in this market. I think like most people, and the challenge as always is trying to be objective when we clearly have such a strong long-term bullish bias on Bitcoin over the long run. And so, you know, just trying to do my best here as an analyst to, you know, keep ebbing and flowing and bobbing and weaving. So that's what we're doing.
Amen. That's the job of any good analyst. And you've done a really great job. You flagged Bitcoin's bear market, I think, before most people. On November 14th at 97K, when most people were calling for a correction because Bitcoin's price at that point in time hadn't fallen by the same percentage as the other corrections during this bull market, you called the bear. Bitcoin is obviously down an additional 20% since your call, down a total peak to trough if we're calling the below $74,000 April low break the low, down 42% from the October high. So walk us through what you used to make that call.
I have to give a really big shout out to someone who you might know, Vinny Lingham, because in February of 2025, he asked me, Caleb, what is it going to take for you to get bearish on Bitcoin? Because I was, you know, one of the more outspoken bulls in 2023, 24, and even in 2025. But like I said earlier, right, we want to be objective analysts. And so there's always going to be a time to be bullish and bearish, especially if we want to be trend follower types of investors, which I would consider myself to be. And so I really kind of put my head down and really worked on the criteria that it's going to make me flip, from bullish to bearish. And, you know, one of the key indicators that I've used over my career, which has basically been 12 years now as an investor, it's no secret, it's the 200-day moving average. For me, I tend to combine the EMA and then the simple moving average as well on the same chart. So I call it a cloud, a 200-day moving average cloud. What I had noticed is that applying that 200 moving average cloud to 2-day candles acted as a perfect support and resistance level, indicating bull markets when we're above it, indicating bear markets when we're below it. And so I literally looked at every single bull market transitioning into a bear market, and every single one of them was classified by a breakdown below that moving average. So I decided to calculate, and I said, after that breakdown, how has price for Bitcoin behaved thereafter? And on average, I found that Bitcoin fell an additional 58.5%. in the months after that breakdown. So I said, look, if I'm going to be objective, if and when we get that breakdown, I'm going to flip bearish. We came into that zone in April of 2025 when all the tariff tantrum stuff was taking place, but we never broke down below that range. We perfectly rebounded on it exactly as we did in the middle of 2024, exactly as we did in the middle of 2023. And so I thought, look, you know, party on, right? And we could see that right there on the chart. This goes all the way back to 2020. You know, we could see there in Q1 of 2023, we broke above that 200 moving average cloud applied to 2-day candles. Essentially, what we're looking at here, guys, is the 400-day moving average cloud, right? No secret to it. And what I notice is it's perfect support. It's perfect support on every single one of those retests. And so I told investors in February of 2025, if and when we get that breakdown, I'm going to flip bearish. I was still very bullish in October of 2025, but as soon as we got that invalidation, I had to look at the data, and I'm saying, man, a 58.5% average decline does not sound bullish to me. So if it doesn't sound bullish, it's probably pretty damn bearish. I have to flip bearish based on the objective data. And that's what this was the only indicator that allowed me to change my mind.
That makes a ton of sense. And, you know, sometimes we have to go against our gut. We have to go against our feeling. That's what we need to do as investors in order to make outsized returns and actually beat the market, whatever benchmark we're looking at as our benchmark. You know, and one of the things that you said is like, you're a long-term Bitcoin bull. You think over a long enough time horizon, Bitcoin's going to $1 million and beyond. So during moments like these, how do you fight that inner voice in your head that's telling you don't take any Bitcoin off the table, don't take it off the table, and just read the tape, be objective about your analysis and execute?
Well, you know, Maybe this is going to upset some people. I really don't know. But, you know, I did end up selling a decent chunk of my Bitcoin. I haven't announced the specifics, but I've been saying between 30 and basically 50% of my Bitcoin stack I sold on that breakdown, right around 96,500. So my intention now is to identify key areas of potential support and key accumulation signals in order to reaccumulate that Bitcoin at lower prices. And I've been in this market for 12 years. I know every time everyone always says, don't try to outsmart the market. Don't try to outsmart Bitcoin. Just stack, 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 stack. And I think that's fine for a lot of investors. But, you know, I'm a market junkie. I think I do a pretty darn good job at navigating things. And so I want to try to kind of pick my spots as best as I can and be a little bit more tactical, because this is what I do for a living, right? For someone who has a 9-to-5 job, who has a family, who has all these other responsibilities, I totally understand. You can't babysit the market. You can't babysit your DCAs. But all I could do is share my process and how I'm viewing things and explain the strategic choices that I'm trying to make. And so that's essentially what I'm trying to do. And so the mindset shift for me now has gone from how do I make as much money as possible as an investor to the long side to how do I survive a bear market for as long as possible and give myself the best chance for success to making it to the other side. Because again, I fundamentally believe wholeheartedly that we're going to be in another bull market at some point, whether it's 6 months from now, shit, maybe it could be next week, right? So I have criteria. As soon as we get back above that 2-day 200 moving average cloud, I'm going to be the biggest bull on social media again. I can't wait for that day, by the way. But if I'm going to be based on the data, I have to be objective. And I have to recognize that under that 2-day 200 moving average cloud, price is probably going to go lower. Downtrends are characterized by the production of lower lows and lower highs. Mm-hmm. That's why I thought we were going to fall below the April 2025 lows. I've been going on a bunch of podcasts over the last month and a half saying that, and we just got it yesterday, you know? And so personally, I think we're probably going to head a little bit lower. But again, let's also recognize this. Like I said, downtrends produce lower lows and lower highs. So in that environment, great, we just made the lower low. So logically, shouldn't we be thinking of where are we going to make the next lower high, right? And I think that next lower high is probably going to be around that 97 to 98K pivot that we just had in mid-January. So that for me is kind of the key area now.
Gotcha. Okay. So as far as considering what happens next, mm-hmm. what would cause you to look at it as a bear market rally versus an actual break back into the bull market? Like you mentioned the two-day, 200-day moving average, but then at the very end there, you mentioned that $97,000 area, which is about as high as we got during the last lower high. Which of those areas would it take breaking in order for you to flip back bullish and why?
It would be a breakout above the two-day 200. Coincidentally, right now, it's trading right around 100,000. So not too far off from that recent lower high that we just produced in mid-January, right? So we might get that rally to 97,000. I'm going to be very cautious when we get there because based on price structure, which I study a hell of a lot of, that looks like the production of a potential lower high, which is going to produce continuation back to the downside. But if we get that rally back above the two-day 200, which I think right off the top of my head right now is trading right around 100,000, then we can say that's no longer a lower high. And we can actually prove that because now we're producing a higher high relative to where we were in mid-January at 96, 97,000, right? So that would also look like a price structure shift as well, saying, you know, and that would cause me to really reconsider, was that just a mid-cycle correction for Bitcoin? Or was that just, you know, essentially the shortest bear market ever? And are we moving into a new bull market, right? So that becomes the question.
Very well said. In the event that we aren't, in the event that, you know, the bear market still has a ways to develop, looking at levels underneath us, I think that's one of the key questions a lot of people have. If Bitcoin is to trend lower, it broke briefly below the April low, but as we've seen throughout this bear market, Bitcoin tends to do that. It tends to have an initial bounce. Everybody gets way too overconfident, and then all of a sudden it blows below that level later. Right now we're at, I think, 78K. The April low is 74,420, something around there. Bitcoin is already touched underneath that. In the event that we do break that low, what are some of the critical levels that you have in mind? And I'll preface this by saying a lot of folks are taking a look at the 200-week moving average as well as realized price. Realized price, the average on-chain cost basis, both of those, you mentioned the confluence between that 100K level and where the 97K levels sit. You also have the 200-week moving average at about 58K and realized price is about 56K. So those two levels are very close to one another. Historically, the 200-week moving average has served as a pretty good bear market base, not to say floor. We've broken underneath it before, namely during the last cycle. But those are the levels that I have in mind. Are there any other critical levels underneath where we are now, hovering right above the April lows, that if we break underneath them, you would be looking to as the next zone of support?
So I think, first of all, that 200-week moving average cloud, that's been a magnet for every bear market in history, right? We always go down to that 200-week moving average, the four-year average. And this isn't a Bitcoin-specific dynamic, right? We can apply that 200-week moving average cloud to the S&P 500, to the NASDAQ, to plenty of individual stocks that are considered to be great compounders over the long run. And you'll notice, put the charts in logarithmic scale, they come down into that 200-week moving average, they rebound on it, they reaccelerate, they enter a multi-year new bull market, right? So that 200-week moving average cloud is an ultra, ultra powerful DCA tool, irrespective of the asset, but 100% I apply it to Bitcoin. And so for me right now, again, I use the EMA and the SMA. And so that range for me, I think, is right between 57 and 67,000. You'll notice that's just below the prior cycle highs. Last bear market in 2022 was the first bear market ever where price fell below the prior cycle all-time highs, right? And so we did kind of have this time is different kind of dynamic in 2022, where first of all, we fell below the prior cycle all-time highs, which was 20,000. We obviously fell down to 15K. And we also actually fell below the 200-week moving average cloud. At the time, that 200-week moving average cloud was right around 20,000. And we ended up falling an additional, 25%. So if we apply a 25% discount on the current 200-week moving average, that gets us well into the 40s, right? And I think that's a decent level to kind of keep our eye on as well, because we don't know. Maybe this time is going to be different. Maybe it's not. We really don't know. All we can do is try to be, I love this phrase, strong opinions loosely held, right? Mm-hmm. And we want to be able to adapt. We want to be able to have perceived biases for where the market is likely going to go based on objective data, and then be willing to adapt. I would also really pay attention to those mid 2024 lows going back to July, August, and September of 2024. And that also gets us into that 40K range as well, And so for me, I think if we do get that invalidation below the 200-week moving, first of all, I'm going to be buying the retest of the 200-week moving average unequivocally. I think most investors probably should, or at least give it serious, serious thought. And if we go lower, I'll still buy more.
Beautiful. And speaking of this, this 20 to 25% discount off of the 200-week moving average, if that were to happen again, I'm going to share my screen here. This is not a chart that appears on Cubic Analytics, but it's one of my favorite ones to take a look at Bitcoin, and it helps me zoom out a lot. It's the price drawdown from all-time high. So this basically takes Bitcoin's price in log scale, and it overlays it with these red bars that shows you peak to trough from the top of the bull market to the bottom of the bear market, how much did Bitcoin draw down? And that 20 to 25% discount you're talking about on the 200-week moving average, which is currently at 58K, would put us firmly in that $40,000 to $45,000 zone. And that would mean that this sort of rule of thumb that Bitcoin has had, if you will, where we get diminishing marginal drawdowns in each subsequent bear market would still be intact, because that would only be about a 60 to 65% drawdown from the all-time high. And so this long-held principle that Bitcoiners have had, which is that as this asset monetizes, the bull markets get less severe, would still be intact. But it wouldn't be this, oh, we're going to bottom at $70,000 type less severe. It would simply mean that instead of $75,000 last cycle, we get 75% last cycle, we get 65% this cycle. And then next cycle, so on and so forth. So I just wanted to share this because what you just mentioned lines up exactly with this pattern that we've seen here.
Yeah, this is a phenomenal chart. And I think it also kind of speaks to we can think about the fundamentals now of the investor base based on the adoption, which is we now have institutional players, we now have retirement capital invested into Bitcoin. So we can think of that hopefully as being, this is going to be a test, right? This is a theory that I'm basically laying out. It's not a new idea, but is that capital going to be stickier, right? Are those investors less likely to capitulate on Bitcoin? Because, fundamentally think about it. If someone's putting their entire Roth IRA into IBIT, are they really going to be someone who's capitulating at 60,000, 50,000, even 40,000, the answer is probably not, right? So if we think that capital is going to be stickier, then fundamentally the price drawdowns should be less significant. I loved how you said that. And we could clearly see that in those pink shaded areas, there's almost an uptrend to those lows, right? So all I see is higher lows on that chart, while Bitcoin's ultra long-term chart also continues to produce higher lows. So, this is where, again, it's like fundamentally my long-term thesis on Bitcoin is super intact. And so now it's like, okay, how do I pick my spots to accumulate more Bitcoin this cycle during a time where a lot of investors are going to fold? The thing I've really been preaching to people is like you need to embrace a survival mentality in this market, because we know we don't want to capitulate on our Bitcoin. So if we keep falling for the permeable narratives that I continue to see all over X. We're bottoming here. We're going back to all-time highs by the end of January. Oh, no, we're going back to new all-time highs by the end of Q1. You know, that's going to really wear people down if they continue to allocate more of their scarce capital into Bitcoin and we keep failing, right? Psychologically, they're going to be damaged, which is going to make it very difficult for them to make it to the other side where, you know, I'm ultra, ultra confident Bitcoin is going to make new all-time highs. It's a matter of when, not if. But I'd rather be a samurai in a garden than a gardener on the battlefield, right? So I want to embrace and prepare to endure, right? That's really the key message that I keep sharing with investors. That's why I wrote the Bear Market Playbook in November of last year.
Fantastic. Yeah. And for anybody who isn't subscribed to Cubic Analytics already, I'd highly recommend it. CubicAnalytics.substack.com. $50 a month will make you quite a lot of money as an investor. I will admit, Caleb, that I was subscribed to the free version up until very recently. And then I became a paid subscriber very recently after your calls aged really well.
Thanks, man.
One thing I do want to ask about is Bitcoin relative to everything else. So obviously the S&P is making new highs. The NASDAQ is making new highs. Granted, if you zoom out quite a bit, if you zoom out to the one-year chart, it does seem that their rate of change is decelerating a little bit. But either way, they're doing well. Bitcoin isn't. One of the charts that I did see, and you also have a similar chart to this that I'll share, is Bitcoin versus the software ETF. I think it's IGF or IVF, or ILV rather. Bitcoin is extremely tightly correlated to that. They topped on almost the exact same day. Also ARKW, which is the ARK Next Generation Internet ETF, they topped on the same day. So it seems that Bitcoin is trading really in line with software. That seems to be the explanation for why it's underperformed. The global M2 chart that was extremely popular last year, which I also recreated in my Bloomberg terminal, completely failed. And so Bitcoin is underperforming. It's moving in line with software. What would you attribute this correlation to? And when do you think that, if anything, software and Bitcoin will turn around?
So one of the key turning points that I had both as an investor and as an analyst was recognizing a lot of market conditions are just a reflection of risk appetite. And so now that creates a dilemma, not really a dilemma, but really an opportunity is how do we go about measuring risk appetite, right? And we could do that in a variety of different ways. And so I try to embrace as many of them as I possibly can and then look at the weight of the evidence of those types of risk on behaviors versus risk off behaviors. And so in 2022, I actually started sharing the chart of Bitcoin versus IGV, which is the iShares Expanded Internet ETF. It's a great fund, actually. It's been getting hammered lately. But, you know, as you kind of set up the alley-oop in that question is they basically peaked at the exact same time. And not only did IGV peak at the same time as Bitcoin, but ARKW did as well, which is the ARK Next Gen Internet ETF. And, you know, so a lot of investors right now, and look, this is not a new correlation, right? This goes back to the beginning of, the end of 2022. It goes back even to 2021. It goes back even further beyond that. And so when we think about the most speculative stocks, essentially, I think ARKW is a great representation of that. It's not perfect, but it's a great representation. And we could see, okay, the peaks and troughs, the magnitudes are going to be slightly different, but the timing of all of those peaks and troughs are pretty darn similar. Not perfect, not identical. In some cases, they are. And actually, as we look at this chart, ARKW and Bitcoin peaked on the exact same day in early October 2025. And so we hear all these narratives coming out trying to justify why this correction has happened. First of all, I don't know why this correction has happened. And to be honest, I really don't care. What matters to me is intellectual honesty and recognizing, you know, the 10-10 liquidation event has no impact on ARKW. It really doesn't. It has no impact.
So you can't use it as, you can't attribute that as the reason for Bitcoin's price decline because the bear market in Bitcoin isn't isolated. It's a bear market across other assets. You just need to look elsewhere.
That's correct. And so everyone keeps trying to propose these idiosyncratic Bitcoin risks. They're even trying to say that Sailor is going to be insolvent. They're going to have to liquidate their Bitcoin. You know, there's all these risks. I don't believe that to be true, even though I'm definitely not bullish on MicroStrategy here. And so, you know, we can also add IGV onto the chart. So while ARKW is going to be full of a lot of speculative, high growth oriented, even unprofitable stocks, IGV is going to be your Salesforce, your Microsoft, your Palantir, your Adobe, your Intuit, your Oracles, your prime of the prime, your blue chip software stocks, if you will, right? And again, there's zero fundamental correlation between Bitcoin and IGV, right? It's not like IGV is 35% allocated to IBIT. And we can say, oh, well, there's some overlap there. So it would make sense. No, that doesn't exist, right? you know, a lot of investors are also trying, I didn't bring this chart with me, but they're trying to highlight, you know, quantum computing risks and associating that to the justification for Bitcoin sell-off. I'd encourage a lot of investors, people who are watching this this podcast, you know, either go to my Twitter page, my X page, excuse me, and you'll see I have a chart of this comparing Bitcoin versus Rigetti Computing and IonQ, the two leading quantum computing stocks. They also peaked on October 6th, right at the same exact time as Bitcoin, and they've been in a massive drawdown, and their charts overlaid on top of each other look identical. So if it was really a quantum computing risk, wouldn't value be rotating out of Bitcoin and into quantum stocks? And the answer is no. And the reason why is because it's all risk appetite. Mm-hmm. So again, here we have IonQ in blue, Rigetti in green. They peaked within 5 days of each other. And these drawdowns, you know, again, the magnitudes are going to be very different, but the price action since the middle of 2024 has been identical, right? Because it's all just risk appetite. So again, I don't know why risk appetite is waning. All I know and all I can actually prove is that risk appetite is waning and that it's not just affecting Bitcoin, it's also affecting the most speculative risk instruments in the stock market as well.
Fantastic. So that's a phenomenal, and what the answer you just gave there is one that's so valuable, because I feel like every Bitcoin podcast that I listen to today, they're much fewer than in the past. Every Bitcoin podcast that I host or I'm a part of, most of them, people seem to attribute Bitcoin's recent weakness to the 10/10 liquidation event and the crypto contagion that could come as a result of that. And look, I don't blame people for drawing that conclusion necessarily. I mean, back in 2022, like, it was pretty abundantly obvious what caused a massive amount of sell pressure that was native to Bitcoin relative to everything else. But even then, everything else was in a bear market, right? You had, we had QE tapering, right, back in 2022. We also had rate hikes on the horizon. And so naturally, it seemed pretty logical as to why Bitcoin fell. But this time, it doesn't seem as obvious. And so during moments like these, when you can't really gauge why risk appetite is waning, like there aren't macroeconomic indicators that you could look to and say, okay, look, credit spreads are widening out, risk appetite's waning, time to take some off the table. Do you rely solely on the charts, or is there something else that you look to?
You know, I think charts are the closest source of truth that we have, right? Because again, we can fundamentally, the 10/10 liquidation event is not the reason for the sell-off in IonQ and Rigetti. Mm-hmm. That makes no sense. But why are the charts identical? So how do we reconcile that? Well, it must just be because risk appetite is waning across the entire market. And I want to be very clear about this as well, because this is where it's really vital for investors to embrace nuance. It's one of the catchphrases that I talk about all the time, embrace nuance. I want to be very clear about this. There is sufficient risk appetite to support the ongoing uptrend for the broader stock market indices. There is not a sufficient amount of risk appetite to support the uptrends for the most speculative of equities. That's the difference here. That's the divergence that's taking place, right? Software stocks, speculative equities are getting absolutely hammered. The growth stocks, we're seeing value drastically outperform growth stocks. That does not happen typically during a bull market. And that's generally emblematic of a risk-off period. So why did risk-off enter the market in October of 2025? That's affecting everything? I don't know. All I know is it's leading to material breakdowns, and I don't like to be involved in breakdowns.
Fantastic. Very well said. So if we are in this more risk-off period where value is outperforming growth, gold and silver obviously ripping for their own reasons. We could chat about that if you like. Looking ahead into the horizon, we have a couple more rate cuts priced this year, not that much. The Fed is doing balance sheet expansion in line with GDP growth, so not necessarily stimulative for the economy. We have had a couple of pretty good economic prints. I know it wasn't included in your chart. And actually, on a tertiary glance through your Twitter account, the last time you tweeted about PMIs was almost a year ago, back in May 2025. So the manufacturing PMI came in at 52.6, pretty major expansion. Are PMIs not part of your framework for gauging the trajectory of the U.S. economy? And if so, what is? And what is the state of the U.S. economy and its trajectory? Tell us about risk appetite or the potential probabilities for the direction of risk appetite over the next couple months.
I have a hard time with both the ISM data and even like the manufacturing PMIs. First of all, the ISM data is survey data. It's soft data, mm-hmm. right? So, okay, we're going to go survey a bunch of purchasing managers and we're going to figure out how they feel about things. You know, do we really want to measure vibes? or do we want to measure data, right? And certainly vibes can be interpreted as data. So if we track the data long enough, if we track the vibes long enough, we have data. Okay, I get it. But it's not a core component for me, especially because, you know, and I say this with a lot of respect for the people who share this kind of analysis, but, you know, I've been hearing people talk about PMIs bottoming and accelerating since 2022. And we're only now seeing the manufacturing get into positive territory above 50, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, they're applying a lot of cycle analysis. They're looking at liquidity cycles and overlaying that on top of ISM. They're looking at South Korean data and exports. And okay, you know, I mean, all the power to you. I think for me, I really just, if we want to be investors, I actually think a lot of us need to ignore macroeconomic data. And I'm saying that as someone who has a degree in economics. So I recognize the irony of that statement. But it's really key to recognize and understand the stock market is not the economy. Mm. And if the stock market is not the economy, then sure as hell, Bitcoin isn't either. Mm. Right?
By the same token, if you gauge risk sentiment and then invest it off of that based solely on the PMI data, you will have missed out on the last 3 to 4 years of the bull market, because manufacturing PMI has been below 50 in the time that Bitcoin has gone from 16K all the way up to 126K. So if you rely on vibes per se, they can be useful in my mind to gauge these shifts, but they can't be the sole thing that you rely on. When price is telling you a completely different story, you have to listen to price. Price overrides any other indicators you can get elsewhere.
100%. I had a professor back when I was in college, I know it was quite a while ago. This was maybe like 10 years back. And I asked him, I was like, what's the leading indicator for the stock market? Like, I want to beat the stock market. What's the leading indicator for the stock market? And he goes, no. The stock market is the leading indicator. And it was like, mind blown moment, right? I'm this young undergrad, you know, I'm studying at UC Santa Barbara and I'm having this conversation with one of my professors. And it's like, oh shit, price is the leading indicator, right? Because price, asset prices are just net present value of future cash flows discounted by an interest rate. Mm. So by definition, the prices of assets are a voting mechanism for investors today based on their expectations of the future. So price is not perfect, nor can we even say that the markets are perfectly efficient, because they're not. But they are the most efficient, the most accurate forecasting mechanism that we have available to us. Do they provide false signals? Absolutely. What's any indicator that has a perfect 100% accuracy rate? It doesn't exist in anything. Steph Curry, the greatest three-point shooter of all time, right? He probably shoots like 42% for his career from three, you know, and he's the best, right? So, you know, asset prices in and of themselves are the crystal ball. And so, you know, a lot of my work, what I try to do, because I do pay a lot of attention to macro. That's a huge piece of my overall analytical framework. And the reason why I'm doing that is I'm trying to recognize, is the macro data robust enough to support the price action, right? And trend of prices in terms of assets. And so that's why, you know, over the years, first of all, I thought we were going to have a recession in 2022 and going into 2023. After the banking crisis, and I saw credit spreads come back down, I saw yields continue back higher, I said, there's going to be no recession. And so in April of 2023, I said, no recession, bull market, we're here, right? And since then, the way I've been describing the economy, because it certainly hasn't been strong, it's been resilient and dynamic. And, you know, I think that's really key. And so when I look at macroeconomic data, I want to look, okay, prime age unemployment, you know, 3.7%. That's pretty damn good, right? For people between age 25 to 54, it's pretty solid. Prime age labor force participation, looking pretty good. Industrial production growing 2% year over year. Shit, GDP growth coming in 4.3, right? So is that data, from a macro lens, enough to confirm my conclusions that I've already established about price action and trends within the asset markets themselves? And for me, over the years, the answer has been yes. By the way, I'm still quite optimistic on the equity markets, but I have to look at that data for Bitcoin breaking below the two-day 200 and say, there's a divergence taking place here. And if Bitcoin is going to act like a correlated instrument to risk on equities, and it is, then those risk on equities are probably going to struggle as well.
Beautiful. So that said, right, looking ahead, do you think Bitcoin's performance now is heralding underperformance of equities in the next couple of months? Or do you think that this is entirely, like, do you think that what's happening to Bitcoin in growth more broadly will eventually trickle its way down to value? Or does that depend a lot on whether or not we can flip back to risk on, and then we start seeing Bitcoin outperformance once more?
Yeah, it's a risk that Bitcoin's downtrend could ripple itself further into the equity markets, right? Because again, we've seen that downtrend simultaneously affecting the IonQs, the quantum computing stocks, the software stocks, the ArcWs of the world, so on and so forth. So clearly it's having an impact in isolated areas within the market. The question is it going to materialize in a broader pain for the indices as a whole, right? And that is a risk. I've been saying, you know, I'm going to have some breakdown levels for the S&P, for the NASDAQ. If those levels trigger, I will get bearish on the broader market. But we're just not there yet. And so I keep looking at equities and I'm saying, you know, everything at the top, at the surface level looks quite fine. So I don't want to run for the exits. But, you know, I've been selling stocks this week. I've been selling stocks last week. I've been gradually reducing exposure in a lot of areas, especially in some of these high-flying positions I had massive gains in. You know, I sold all of my Coherent stock last week. I was selling shares at 800% gains in 2 years, 3 years. So, you know, I have to take some of those chips off the table. If I'm looking at speculative risk assets, I'm saying they're not performing well in this market, but I have this stock that's up 800%. I think I'm going to take some profits. Right, I think I'm going to rotate some of that capital and be prepared to DCA into other attractive names. So I've also been selling Google. I've been selling some Palantir. Palantir has been my largest equity position for years. And same with Google. So, you know, could Bitcoin's price action ripple in? Yeah, absolutely. But again, as I'm looking at the weight of the evidence in the equity market, it's too soon for me to come on to any of these podcasts and say, I'm bearish on equities. You probably want to be very defensive with the most speculative risk assets in the equity market. And we've been seeing the proof of that taking place with IGV. I mean, the 5-day rate of change for IGV as of yesterday was down almost 14% in 5 trading days. That only happened in the middle of 2022, in March of 2020, and back in 2011. So, you know, those are rare occurrences, right? So the defensive posture that I've had in software has been proven to be warranted, essentially. I'm hoping soon that, you know, those stocks are going to come rip-roaring back, but we got to see bottoms across those markets. Can we produce lows here? Can we re-accelerate? Can we try to get some bid coming back into the market for any reason? I don't care what it is. We just got to see the bid come back. And unfortunately, we're just not seeing it, right? We're not seeing it in Bitcoin. We're not seeing it in quantum computing stocks. We're not seeing it in flying car stocks. We're not seeing it in psychedelic stocks. We're just not seeing it.
Fantastic. We're not seeing it. This is a completely, Bitcoin is a totally correlated asset. This isn't an isolated event. This isn't crypto contagion or whatever people are talking about. This is specifically risk appetite. I want to ask you about Bitcoin's daily RSI. One of the charts that you have here, you've noted that every single time that Bitcoin's RSI rises or fell below 25, rather, which you can see both levels marked here with dashed lines, it managed to get back above 75 without getting below 25 again. This time, you've noted that it only gets it only went back to 70 and has since then broken back down below 25. So what does this mean for Bitcoin? And how are you thinking about RSI within your broader framework of what you would consider to be the start of a potential bear market reversal?
Yeah, so I think, you know, I'm someone who didn't really pay a lot of attention to RSI back in the day, but over the years, I've been implementing it more and more. And I think one of the ways that we can use it is, you know, below 25, in my case, I'm using that as an oversold condition. And above 75, I'm using that as an overbought condition. First of all, for me personally, I view overbought conditions as being bullish. If investors are flooding their capital into an asset, producing an overbought signal, how is an excessive amount of demand bearish for an asset? I don't really know how it's bearish, right? And so vice versa here, what we're seeing is the inability to produce an overbought signal, which to me reflects weakness underlying within the market. And if there was a statistical trend during an uptrend, and that statistical trend is no longer intact because we were unable to get back above 75 after being oversold, that to me is further confirmation of a shift in actual price action. Because look, indicators are just a reflection of price, right? In this case, we're looking at what is the momentum of price.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, a lot of purists in technical analysis dismiss a lot of indicators like RSI, even moving averages, Williams percent R indicators, MACD, because they're saying it dilutes price and I only care about price. So why would I want to dilute it? Okay, fair enough. I don't necessarily believe that to be true. Because we can find amazing little relationships like this that prove something has shifted within the underlying data. Statistically, quantifiably, this is 100% true. We can't refute that it got below 75. It didn't get back above 75. No one can tell me otherwise, right? And so this to me looks like a reflection of a shift in the overall trend for price, which again confirms my bearish flip at 97,000, right? So as we're looking at weight of the evidence, okay, Caleb, you came out in November and you said we're in a bear market at 97,000. Has that call been correct or not? Objectively, it's been correct because as of this morning, we're trading at 74,000. So, you know, price has fallen 23,000 from when I flipped bearish. And we've also now produced lower lows relative to November of 2025. And I took this chart screenshot, I think it was yesterday morning or even 2 days ago before yesterday's severe sell-off. And we've now fallen below the April of 2025 lows as well. So again, if downtrends are the production of lower lows and lower highs, well, we've just produced more lower lows. So was my call to flip bearish correct? It was, because we've now produced lower lows. And because now this data here using the RSI is confirming something has changed, right? And unfortunately, it's telling us that now, you know, 2.5 months after I flipped bearish. So again, did we dilute price here? Yes, we did. But if we're looking to confirm the bias shift, this is doing that.
Fantastic. One of the things that you've talked about in your Substack and also on Twitter quite frequently as it pertains to daily RSI and even weekly RSI, is to watch for bullish RSI divergences.
Oh, yeah.
You've noted that throughout the bull market since 2022, every major local bottom occurred after one. So higher lows in RSI, lower lows in price. We're in a bear market, right? So does this necessarily work, watching for bullish RSI divergences, work as an indicator for cycle bottoms or simply an indicator for local bottoms where we may cool off for a little bit before trending lower?
Local bottoms. And this is important. Bullish RSI divergences are inherently bullish setups, right? Bullish setups are probably not going to work in a bear market, right? So as we look at the 2022 bear market and we find those bullish RSI divergences that did occur, they all produce new lows. So I think one of them occurred around 43,000, produced new lows. One of them occurred around 30,000, produced new lows. One of them occurred right around 21,000, we also produced new lows. Now, this is where it's important to recognize, you know, if you were an investor in 2022 and you bought at 43,000, 30,000, and 21,000, you did pretty darn well for yourself in 2025. Right? So the market timing here can vary depending on each person based on their needs, based on their financial goals, based on their obligations, based on their risk appetite, based on their willingness to endure pain as investors, right? But it's important to recognize those bullish RSI divergences in 2022, they may have worked for a little bit, but they produced new lows.
Mm-hmm.
So should we, if we want to optimize our DCA schedule, should we be buying those bullish RSI divergences in a bear market? And my answer would actually be no. I would actually love to see those bullish RSI divergences form, fail, produce new lows, and then say, hey, thanks for capitulating. All the people who bought that bullish RSI divergence expecting brand new all-time highs, you're now getting stopped out. You're selling to me. Thank you very much. Right? And so that's kind of the game theory that I'm playing here is, if we are going to have an opportunity to produce another lower high below 97,98,000, we might look for a bullish RSI divergence to form to give us a hint that, hey, that bear market rally is coming. It would just be a mean reversion. And if and when that does happen, I would generally view that as being a selling opportunity for investors who feel like they've been overwhelmed by recent price action, that they're overexposed. There's no harm, no foul in that. You have to be real with yourself as an investor about what you're willing to endure. And if that bullish RSI divergence forms, we run back up to 96, 97, 98,000. I think for a lot of investors, that would be a selling opportunity, actually.
Fantastic. One thing I want to ask you about, you put out a voice note that was really great yesterday or 2 days ago. And in it, you were talking about the April 2025 lows. You were talking about capitulation. So we're now butting up against the April 2025 lows. We talked about it a little bit on the show so far. We broke it once, we broke back above it, and we're now like right on top of it, right? Mm-hmm. Obviously, during a bear market, this is the next level to go. So as far as capitulation is concerned, how would you define capitulation? Is it a near-term event and then we have a correction and mean reversion? Or when you say capitulation, are you referencing, you know, the final sort of last breath of the bear market where the selling is sort of nonstop? You get these huge wicks all the way down to these really key levels that we discussed. How do you define capitulation?
I think there can be multiple events of capitulation within a bear market. So as we look at 2022, for example, we had one with Three Arrows Capital, we had another one with Celsius, and then we had another one with FTX, right? So we had these various capitulation events that occurred. You know, ideally, I want to be a buyer in that capitulation event. I don't want to be basing my DCAs on hope and the expectation that we're making new all-time highs imminently, and then we fail to do so, some fundamental event happens that takes a lot of investors out, and now I'm feeling overwhelmed by that market sentiment, and I'm capitulating my Bitcoin. I want to capitulate at 97,000 and be looking to buy sub 70, right? And so I'm hoping we get that capitulation, regardless of the reason, because I want to be a buyer when other investors have over-leveraged themselves and are now being forced sellers. Sell to me, please. That's my psychology here, right? So, you know, there's a phrase in markets that tops are a process and bottoms are an event. We could look at the topping process that objectively occurred in Q4 of 2025. You could even make the case that the topping process was almost the entirety of 2025, in fact. But as we look at major market bottoms, even within this chart that we're looking at here, look at that price action at the beginning of August 2024. Look at the price action in March of 2023. There are significant wicks that looked like capitulation that caused people to sell rapidly to stronger hands. I want to be one of those stronger hands.
Phenomenal. It's one of the best things that you could do. You know, one thing I want to ask you, taking a step back from the near-term price action, is, you know, obviously we talked about how correlated Bitcoin is to the next generation internet ETF, the software ETF more broadly, and these growth stocks. You're of the belief that Bitcoin will eventually make its way to $1 million. I think anybody watching this show also is of that same belief. I'm of the belief that the way that Bitcoin is trading now is an informational asymmetry, not one that we should fight, right? One that we should recognize and position ourselves accordingly, but because obviously price is truth, right? You shouldn't fight the market. If you fight the market, you're going to lose a lot of money. But what do you make of Bitcoin's current correlations? And do you think Bitcoin is destined to trade this way forever? Or do you believe that at some point in time, Bitcoin will trade closer in line to its monetary properties, which allow it to act more like a commodity than a software stock?
Yeah, I believe the latter. So I think eventually Bitcoin will be considered more of a store of value reserve type of asset, because fundamentally that's what it is. The market doesn't treat it that way right now, but I view that as being a process. So we have risk asset over here, we have reserve asset over here. We're on that transition process across that spectrum, if you will. And so it's a matter of time. It's not a matter of, it's a matter of if, not when. Or wait, is that right? It's a matter of when, not if, excuse me. You get my point. So, you know, I think that that process is going to take place, but you know, as a Bitcoiner, because I would consider myself to be a Bitcoiner, I still have the majority of my net worth invested in the asset. Clearly, that's where my bias is for the long run. But we also have to recognize that what we want to be true may or may not be true in the market right now. So if we're going to base our view and therefore our actions, our investment actions, on our bias, which is unproven by the market right here, right now, that to me seems irresponsible. You mentioned it earlier. You don't want to fight trends. You want to align with them. It's the same thing here. Okay, I believe over the long run, Bitcoin is going to be treated as a reserve asset amongst a variety of other things. That's why I think it's going to $1 million. But right here, right now, I have to recognize that the market as a whole, which is way more strong than I am because there's so much more capital flushing around the system than I have, the market doesn't treat it that way. The market doesn't think that it deserves that title. And instead, it's treating it like a major risk asset. That's not a problem. And in fact, I think we should just use that information to our advantage. Hey, how can we recognize that truth in the market right now and flip the script in our benefit? How can we exploit that? Okay, well, we can exploit that by recognizing that all risk assets, well, let me be very clear, the most speculative of risk assets are struggling in this market environment. They're making firm downtrend advancements. So how can I be a buyer during that downtrend while everyone else is too scared? How can I prevent myself from capitulating? How can I focus on survival? How can I increase my income during this period so that I could stack more when it seems unfavorable so that I can make it to the other side, right? So that's the nuance that we need to embrace here, especially as, like you said, you know, you and I are of the same cloth on this. We fundamentally believe that Bitcoin is going to be viewed as a reserve asset. But right now it's not, unfortunately, right? I want to be very clear about that, unfortunately. But okay, it's unfortunate, but how can we turn that into our fortune? How can we put that into our favor and exploit that objective truth right now? And I basically just laid that out. So I hope that's very clear.
Fantastic. That was abundantly clear. Lots of alpha going here, Caleb. I really do appreciate it. And when you mentioned, how do I increase my income? I was thinking in my head, one of the ways to increase your income is writing a phenomenal Substack where you're predicting the lion's share of moves that are happening. Speaking of, is it okay if we talk about the 12 months Williams R oscillator?
Sure, it is.
Okay, fantastic. I wanted to ask because I know it's behind a paywall. So I suppose viewers who have listened to the end here will get a little bit of a treat and see what's exactly behind the scenes for Cubic Analytics. You put out a post that's called "This Accumulation Signal Just Flashed." Will you pay attention? Is the subtitle? Phenomenal title, by the way. Right in the Thanks. In the pantheon of Substack titles, if ever there was a title that made people want to click, it's definitely that one. And you lay it out here. This is the 12 months Williams oscillator. So walk us, I for one, right, having been in markets for less time than you, but certainly staring at the Bloomberg terminal is one of my favorite pastimes. I have never heard of this indicator in my life. And so I'd wager a lot of our viewers haven't either. And so walk us through what this is, what it's showing, and why it's one of your favorite indicators, one of your top three statistical indicators for Bitcoin.
It's one of my favorite indicators across any market, to be honest. And oddly enough, it's one of the most underrated, like no one's looking at it. And so if no one's looking at it, by definition, it probably contains some alpha. That's how alpha's created, right? I mean, you want to find things that no one else has identified to create the alpha. So what is the Williams percent R? Like I said, even a lot of technicians don't know about this, or if they do, they really don't use it. What it's doing in this particular case, we're looking at Bitcoin with monthly candles, and I've set the Williams percent R length, essentially the look back period, to 12. Since we're using monthly candles, it's analyzing 1 year of price action. And essentially what it's doing is calculating the high and the low over the last 12 months and where price is with respect to those highs and lows, calculating it between 0 and 100%. What I've identified with this indicator, which I was also sharing this in 2022 in real time as an accumulation signal at the end of May, because that's when the signal flashed. I know on each of those dates down there, it says the first of the month, but it obviously occurs on the final trading day of that month. And so I was sharing this indicator in real time in June of 2022. And so what this signal is telling us is that Bitcoin is now oversold on a trailing 1 year basis. So again, as we think about capitulation potentially taking place, this chart is kind of giving us proof that investors have capitulated enough to produce an oversold signal. The thing that's very important about this is not a bottom signal. In fact, on average, Bitcoin has fallen more than 50% after the signal occurs until it reaches the bear market lows. And it tends to stay oversold for about 9 months after first becoming oversold. So I've been referring to this as an accumulation window. This is now an opportunity for investors to say, statistically, objectively, quantifiably, we know that Bitcoin is oversold, and this is an asset where we want to take advantage of those oversold features because other investors are capitulating and we want them to sell to us. And so I think we've now entered part of that accumulation window. My favorite length for this indicator is actually 18 and 24 months. We have not yet achieved the oversold signal yet. So I wanted to let investors at Cubic Analytics know, the premium members, I wanted them to know, hey, the 12-month signal is flashed. I'm actually not going to use this as a DCA signal, but some of you might find it valuable to do so. And I'm planning on using the 18-month to really accumulate Bitcoin aggressively. And so we're not there yet. But for those of you who think that this 12-month signal is sufficient for you, you now have the green light based on this indicator. And, you know, objectively now, this indicator is flashed. We should expect now for more capitulation events to occur because at least one has occurred after every single time this indicator is flashed. And I think we should be prepared for that, right? We want to use that data, that truth to our advantage. We want to exploit it while other investors are running around like a chicken with their head cut off. And so, you know, I'm happy to bring this onto your show and to talk about this. And, you know, we're saving the best for last, essentially. Well, I actually don't know if we're finished. But, you know, this is something that everyone should have on their radar, 100%.
This is fantastic. And I really like how you point out that this isn't a bullish signal, but it is an avowed confirmation of the bearish trend that we witnessed in Bitcoin. But one thing that it does signal is that this bearish trend over the next several months, chances are we're going to see capitulation. During the last cycle, we had two instances of capitulation when this indicator flashed. In each prior cycle, we had one. And so knowing that there's more capitulation on the horizon, and then after that, we're going to be hammering at a bottom, that is something that's hugely encouraging to a lot of people, right? And I think, you know, one of the things that these charts help do specifically is every time Bitcoin takes these massive falls in dollar terms, because most people have a lot of unit bias, they don't look at percentages, they look at dollar terms, they like to get very, very scared. So for instance, like Bitcoin is down 40% from its high. You and I have both lived through periods where Bitcoin is down much further from its high. Obviously, we were both there last cycle when Bitcoin fell 75% peak to trough. But in dollar terms, Bitcoin has never fallen by more, at least during this phase of a bear market. And so people tend to get extremely scared. And so I love charts like this because it allows you to look at Bitcoin's price relative to its price over the last 12, 18, 24 months. And it makes you a little bit less anxious as an investor.
If anything, it should make us excited, right? Mm-hmm. Great. I think Bitcoin's going way higher over the long run. How do I now take advantage of bear market dynamics and put them in my favor? And this chart is giving us that clear signal, right? Amongst a variety of other things, right? And this is where we can now sprinkle in. We can have a process. We can use the 200-week moving average cloud. We can use the long-term holder realized price or even the total realized price. You know, we can use price structure like the, you know, mid-2024 lows to our advantage. But what I'm trying to do here is to paint a picture of overall market dynamics and to look at the weight of the evidence. And the weight of the evidence is telling me, okay, we're in a bear market. Now, how can I best use that information to my advantage to make it to the other side? Because I hope everyone who's watching this recognize, I mean, I'm sure they would feel this way, is that we all think Bitcoin is going to get to the other side. It's a matter of when, not if. And so how do we give ourselves the best chance for success to make it to that eventuality, that hopeful eventuality? Because nothing's 100% in the markets, right? We all know that for sure. So, you know, I want to use the data to my advantage as much as possible. And this is just objective data, right? I'm not using some curve fitted method. I'm using a one-year average, or not a one-year average, a one-year look-back period in this case, right? So I love to use those calendar-based lengths for indicators like this because it's giving us a real kind of clear-cut, objective, fundamental look at things, right? And, you know, even if we want to dismiss the four-year cycle, and I'm certainly not a proponent of the four-year cycle, then okay, that's where we can maybe look at the two-year Williams percent R using the 24 month. That's where we maybe want to look at the year and a half in addition to the 1 year and start to sprinkle in. Because I guarantee you, if and when all three of those signals flash, the 12 month, the 18 month, the 24 month Williams percent R, if they're all oversold, that's like, you can look at the data, and I've shared it with premium members of Cubic Analytics. It's so bullish, it's ridiculous, right? And so the first of those three dominoes has fallen as far as I'm concerned. And I would love for the second one to fall as well, 18 months. And I'm going to start stacking like a madman, I promise.
Phenomenal. All right. So we're nearing the end of our time here, Caleb. Thank you for the explanation. Rapid fire. You mentioned the four-year cycle. I have a couple more questions for you before we go. The four-year cycle, what's your opinion on it? I mean, Bitcoin basically did end up topping about 18 months after the halving date. So I was saying that, you know, the four-year cycle is kind of something of a bygone era. The flows coming into Bitcoin are a lot different. What do you think about the four-year cycle, and does it fold into your narrative about Bitcoin's price, if at all?
It does not. I won't ever dismiss it. I will say I don't invest based upon it, right? Because if the four-year cycle is true, then it's going to be reflected in terms of price. And if I'm an adaptive and objective analyst focused on price, then eventually I'm going to flip bearish, which I did at 97, right? So I don't need the focus on what month are we in within a certain yearly cycle of this, you know, thing, right? I could just focus on price. And if the four-year cycle is true, then it's going to be reflected in price. So that's kind of my presumption on that. And then, you know, I've seen people try to say this as well, which I would actually agree with. You know, we had a down year for Bitcoin. It's never had a down year at that year of the four-year cycle. So was it already invalidated, but it also topped in the same, like it's hard to say, right? It's like each person can pick their justification to say I was right on either side. So at that point, it's meaningless as far as I'm concerned. So, you know, for me, I'd rather just focus on price. And if the four-year cycle is true, or if it isn't, it's going to be reflected in price.
Fantastic. Yeah, because you can validate it and invalidate it based on when you choose your starting point. If you choose it as the start of a calendar year, it's already been invalidated. If you choose it as the halving, then it hasn't. And so it's not necessarily something you want to have as like an S, A, B, or even C tier metric that you look at to gauge where the market is going. You always want to lead with price. Okay, second to last question here. There's been this narrative floating around. A lot of folks have talked about it, even people that I respect greatly, that Bitcoin tends to lag behind gold on a variable lag. And what they've done is they've overlaid Bitcoin's price with gold and tried to extrapolate into the future and said, okay, this is, you know, how much further Bitcoin has to catch up over the next number of months. A lot of people were doing the same exact thing with the global M2 chart back in the day. What's your take on this dynamic of Bitcoin supposedly lagging gold? Is it something that's valid? Is it something that's supported by the data, or is it just totally hot air?
This is a really tough question, actually, and I don't think there's a clear answer, unfortunately. Maybe the comment I want to make on this, and this will tie into Bitcoin, I promise, is if we think about speculators, because speculators exist, and they obviously exist in markets, what are they trying to do? They're trying to manufacture as much arbitrage as possible. They're trying to either buy low and sell high, or buy high and sell higher, right? That's what speculators are trying to do. And so naturally, what they're going to try to do, especially if they're trend followers, they're going to buy high and try to sell higher. And most speculators are trend followers. They're going to be chasing momentum. And so where has the most amount of momentum been in the past year and 2 years? It's been in gold and silver. And so I think a lot of capital, which would normally be represented as speculation in the altcoin and Bitcoin markets, has now shifted itself into gold and silver, in addition to a variety of other things. I'm not trying to justify that that gold and silver's price action is entirely due to speculators. But objectively, I would make the case that capital that would normally be coming into Bitcoin and altcoins is now being invested in terms of speculating in gold and silver markets with the miners, so on and so forth. And so I think that is somewhat of a problem for Bitcoin, if you will. And as we look at this market environment, especially over the last 2 years, you know, Bitcoin has tended to perform better when gold and silver are cooling off, because gold and silver have not really had, up until last Friday, significant pullbacks in their primary uptrends. What they've had is just these stagnations, creating a new base, breakout, continuation, right? Textbook price structure. And so I think it would be a very important test if and when gold and silver stagnate, go through another one of those time-based consolidations, what is Bitcoin's price action in that environment? Does enough speculative behavior come back into Bitcoin in order to create the next risk-on leg, if you will? And is that risk-on leg going to be enough to break us above the two-day 200, at which point I'll flip bullish? That's a big test. And so that's something I'm going to be on the lookout for. But right here, right now, we don't have a clear answer. It's a theory. And let's see.
Phenomenal. You know, it all kind of boils back to that risk appetite discussion that we had earlier, right? These massive rallies in gold and silver, and also the outperformance in value, have indicated that folks are a little bit lower on the risk curve. If we see a sustained downtrend in gold and silver, there is a slightly higher probability that capital is shifting out on the risk curve instead of just going into cash, right? Because in the United States, our cash equivalent is dollars, but in China, elsewhere, like when they're not holding equities or other assets, they're holding gold, right? So it's a little bit different when we consider global flows, but that was a really great answer. So I thank you for that. The last question I want to ask you about is MicroStrategy. So I've got a chart here. This is Bitcoin versus the S&P 500. And one of the things that you said, you said a couple things. Relative to the S&P 500, strategy is actually at its lowest levels since February 29th, 2024. Meaning, over the last 2 years, MSCR has provided zero alpha versus the S&P 500. And then another chart that you showed is this one right here. So on the very top pane, you've got Bitcoin versus the S&P 500. On the bottom pane, you've got strategy stock. So you've said that if people want to know when strategy bottoms, it's probably when Bitcoin bottoms relative to stocks. So I want to get your take on strategy. It's been one of the most well-discussed topics over the course of 2025. So what's your take on the equity itself? And why do you think that its chances are it bottoms when Bitcoin bottoms relative to stocks? What's the thinking behind that?
The thinking is thinking as little as possible and just looking at the chart, right? Can we identify a correlation here, and can we exploit it to our advantage? And so, you know, if we want to be bullish on MicroStrategy, and I'm certainly not here because I don't think we have evidence that Bitcoin has bottomed relative to the S&P. And so if strategy is just essentially speculative Bitcoin, and Bitcoin is speculative stocks, and speculative stocks are just a derivative of the S&P, then this chart gives us that linearity of logic to create a connection and to actually test, is that connection valid in terms of how it's represented in price? And the answer is unequivocally yes, right? As Bitcoin outperforms the S&P, MicroStrategy tends to go up. When Bitcoin is unable to outperform the S&P, the chart on the top goes down. MSTR also goes down. And so, you know, we had a major peak there in the middle of 2025 for MSTR. And, you know, that's a painful experience because that's exactly when Bitcoin peaked relative to the S&P, right? And you'll notice in October of 2025, Bitcoin did not make a new high relative to the S&P. And so, you know, I think this is really important. A lot of people are very, how do I say this without sounding like a frick? a lot of people are very emotional about MicroStrategy, and I understand why. It's a very promising value proposition for investors to get access to a certain type of investment instrument that has made people a shit ton of money. So people recognize you can make a shit ton of money in that stock. People recognize I've made a shit ton of money in that stock, but now they've been finding out that they can also lose a shit ton of money in that stock. Mm. And so I think that we are in an environment where capital, you know, we either want to grow our capital or preserve our capital. We are, in my opinion, not in an environment where we should be looking to grow our capital. We should be looking to, as much as possible, preserve our capital and find statistically valid ways to DCA into short-term pain, right? Mm-hmm. And so as I think about that, okay, maybe you want to buy MSTR for the next bull market. If that's you know, your type of party, go ahead. But at least do that with some form of logic and using the data and charts to our advantage. So, you know, I don't like to necessarily buy things that are in really strong downtrends, or at least not in the early phases of the downtrend. And so you maybe want to wait for this to be in the later stages of a downtrend and maybe even have evidence of bottoming action. Is the chart in the top, BTC relative to the S&P, going to start producing higher lows? So far, it's not. Right? So if and when we can get that evidence and you want to buy MSTR, that should give you more vindication to buy MSTR. But right here, right now, when it's the exact opposite, we're producing lower lows, it's only confirming that the downtrend is not only intact, but it's getting stronger. Which means if you're buying into that downtrend, you're just going to expect to get poorer. And some of us can be comfortable getting poorer in the short term. That's totally fine. But we just have to do that tactically. So this is an environment to be extremely tactical. And that's what I'm trying to do with these charts.
Fantastic. Very well said. Caleb, thank you so much for coming on. I think if the audience can glean anything from your last answer, but the show broadly, it's don't overcomplicate things, right? Look at the chart first, think from first principles, and embrace nuance. This is a phenomenal show. The viewers are going to love it. Any parting thoughts you have for the folks watching this? And then also, where can people find you if they want to see more of your work?
Again, I think this is an environment where, you know, I said it earlier, and I think it's so important. I love this phrase. I'm going to say it again. I'd rather be a samurai in the garden than a gardener on the battlefield. And so translate that into market behavior and investing. And I think that really tells you kind of where we are in terms of things and how I think it's prudent to behave as an investor in this kind of environment. So if that message resonates with you and you like looking at charts and doing TA to just look at the objective basic facts and be willing to adapt if and when the data adapts, I think that's so key and critical. Come check me out over on X at Caleb Franzen. It's just my first and last name. It's my only account over on X. So please don't fall for any scammers or people who are trying to impersonate. It's crazy how much BS is happening over on X with these scammers.
Caleb will never DM you. He will never DM you. He will never ask you for money. He won't have a private Telegram group for you to join, all of those things.
I'm super responsive over on X. So you can comment under my posts. I leave them all open. You could DM me and then check me out over on Substack, cubicanalytics.substack.com. Come check it out for free. I publish weekly over there. If you continue to resonate with the research, reach out to me. We'll find a way to get you on the premium team.
Fantastic. Caleb, thanks again so much for coming on. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Joe. Cheers.
And then there's one which does nothing. Bitcoin, something like that.
Bitcoin 17 years old. 18 years is a $2 trillion asset.
I could care less what Bitcoin trades for.
It's just a matter of...